This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States, and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy.
You're listening to the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 340, brought to you by Graphically and iFanboy members like you. Hey, welcome to the iFanboy.com Pick of the Week podcast, episode 340. What'd I do?
I don't know why it's funny, but it is.
It was.
Okay. I don't know. I can't explain it.
It was a little cranky.
Was it?
Yeah.
I thought it was peppy. I'm Josh Flanagan. Peppy,
so, you know.
I'm here with Ron Richards.
Hey.
Connor Kilpatrick.
Hi.
At iFanboy.com, we like comics. We read comics, and every week we read a bunch of comics, and then one of us picks the one that they write that is the best one. We call that the pick of the week. They write about it on the website. We talk about it here on the podcast, or along with all the other topics and things that we come up with. Before we get to the show, a little reminder: there's going to be spoilers in the show. We're going to talk about what happens in the comics. So if you're not cool with that, off you go.
Wow, you snapped.
That's right. this week, my good friend has the pick.
Well, like, I can't do it.
I'm sorry.
You know, in my review, so the pick of the week this week was Saga number 4, because, you know, sometimes you got to go with the popular opinion.
That's all you did. You looked at the percentage when you felt safe.
Then I went with it. No,
cut and paste.
But keen listeners of the Pick of the Week podcast to last week's episode should notice a little Easter egg in my review where I talked about how I think about superhero comics. Nobody picked up on that. I was so mad. But yeah, so like I mentioned, Saga number 4 by Brian K. Vaughan and Fiona Staples gets Pick of the Week. So 4 issues have come out of Saga and 3 have been Pick of the Week.
Yes. Correct.
Yes. That just gives you an example of what kind of quality juggernaut Saga is.
Or the opposite. It's hard to say.
I had a ton of – it was a big week this week. It was a big, big week this week. And I had a ton of books, and I'm going through – and I read Saga like first because it's one of the books I'm most excited for. And I was like, man, that was really good. I'm like, but I can't pick Saga again. I went through my whole stack, and I had a couple of contenders, and I'm like, you know – it's Saga. I can't deny it, how great Saga is. And when you open up that first page, that gives you a little taste of what's to come.
Boy, you weren't expecting that, were you?
No, I wasn't. So the thing about Saga that I love is just how personable it is. You know, and it's that mix of, and I wrote about it in the review on iFanboy.com, it's that mix between alien, weird, science fiction stuff that Brian K. Vaughan is inventing in his head and Fiona Staples is making come to life, and common, relatable, familiar things that are like our, you know, lives here on Earth. You know, so in this particular case, in this issue really focuses, it kind of zeroes in only on kind of two kind of settings. We've got the bounty hunter with the big cat as a sidekick, the Will. He is showing up on a what is essentially a pleasure planet, you know, like it looks like a whorehouse planet. And that's why the first page is we're if you haven't seen it, oh, it's worth it. Yeah, the planet is called Sextillion, and they're just two women's heads on legs.
Creepy.
Creepy. Creepy as
really
hell.
Creepy.
Yeah, yeah, really creepy. With like fishnet stockings and stripper shoes. And yeah, anyway. So we've got the Will on the pleasure planet. And then at the same time, we've got our protagonists, Alana and Marco, the couple, the new parents who are on the run as they're trying to get away. And really, it's a very quiet, small amount of time passing issue because you really only have the two scenes in this issue. Marco and Alana are Marco has just recovered from the injury that he got in the last was it the last issue? It was the last issue.
Yeah.
And while he was, in delirious pain, he muttered the name of another woman. And so this issue is the argument between Alana and Marco as he explains who she was and what she meant to him, and we find out more about his past. And what I thought what was great about that is that you've got a character who has got horns for a head and another character who's got wings, and there's a floating specter ghost of a little girl, and it's about as alien as it can get, yet I've seen this argument.
Mm-hmm. On Dawson's Creek.
Yes. No, but I mean, but it's this kind of melodrama that is just so, again, relatable, and that is just like, and the way Brian K. Vaughan writes it, combined with Fiona Staples' art, which is just like, talk about acting. And this issue, I really zoned in on the eyes. It's all about the eyes with Fiona Staples. Have you noticed that, like, she can get across such an emotion or such a reaction with just, you know, by changing the angle of the eye or changing, you know, or making, you know, an exasperated look or an angry look or a surprised look or a sad look? You know, I was really, really impressed with that with this issue. So you've got that with Alana and Marco. And then on the other side of the fence, you've got the Will on the pleasure planet. And I'm not really sure why he was there. You know,
he needed some R&R.
And he ends up getting taken by he's smoking a joint, walking around all the people doing it, and then he gets pulled into a special VIP kind of area. He gets pulled in by I don't know what's the male. I guess
not gonna work here anymore.
And brings him in. He's gonna give him a special slave girl, and it's a 6-year-old girl. And so the Will turns around and squashes the head of the pimp and saves the girl, you know. And so you get this sense, and you get this sense of humanity, and it's kind of layered in with the ethereal narration of the baby that was born as she's looking back when she's older, the handwriting narration, and you know, saying that while this guy we don't know much about this bounty hunter, and we get an idea that he's good at what he does, and she explains that she says he was a fucking monster, but we see this side of right and wrong and the side of doing the right thing that he gives us, to the point where I was rooting for him. I was like, great, that's, you know, like that's the right thing to do there. That, you know,
what I think is interesting is we don't really know. I guess from a point of view perspective, who's good and bad. We know that some characters think another character is bad, but that's sort of irrelevant, and I feel like they're playing with that a little bit.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like the Will has been set up to – great name – has been set up to be an adversary, but you know, maybe he's not. Maybe – like there's no good and bad in any of these conflicts sort of, because the one planet's fighting the other planet and neither of them know why anymore. So right. I feel like that's all – part of it. I don't know.
Yeah, and we still don't know. We know that that Alana and Marco are marked people because their two races aren't supposed to, you know, be together, and the two sides of the warring factions, and now the baby is a target. And you know, we get a sense of danger with the bounty hunters, the fact that we know there's at least two bounty hunters after them. We don't know whether the Will is going to save them or be the one to turn them in. Like, we just don't know. And that's the other aspect of Saga that I love, which is that every time I get an issue, I don't know what to expect. I don't know what's coming.
Well, even in terms of like the first issue is all about their endless love or whatever. But in this one, you know, Mark has been lying to her. Yeah. So what else are we going to find out? It's kind of cool like that.
And that all, in that sense, it makes him more like a real relationship. He's got secrets, yeah. You know. Mm-hmm. He's not perfect. And the other hand, his lie wasn't really a bad lie. It wasn't,
no, but yeah.
like they said, it wasn't really relevant to their life anymore. It was loved in the past.
I mean, it wasn't so much a lie from a certain point of view.
Live omission, yeah.
From a certain point of view.
Yes, exactly. I understand. What you're saying.
Yeah. I'm just waiting for one of you guys to get personal.
The best part of this issue hasn't even been mentioned yet, which was the letters page.
The
letters page would have earned it the Pick of the Week honors on its own.
You think so? Yeah.
Because. It's pure Brian K. Vaughan's voice. It's not him writing through a character. It's just him being funny and delightful. And it was just him going through the results of his reader survey. And it was great. There's nothing bad about this book from start to finish, to the letters column, to everything about it.
What actually cracked me up, and like the period punctuation point at the end of the issue, what I laughed was at the very end of the letters column, as he kind of writes and says goodbye, and then he signs it off, "I miss you so much, Brian." I was like, "Oh, he misses me." but yeah, no. All in all, in terms of a $2.99 package, Saga just continues to deliver. It's delivering, really, really, and I talked about it on the show last week. I think I'm loving the more science fiction books that we're getting. I'm loving the fact that it's unexpected and it's new and it's not like the same old kind of thing that we've just seen over and over again. And again, I give you credit for way back calling Fiona Staples as being somebody to watch out for.
I was there too.
She was just who are you again?
I was actually him and I were both reading that book. We said
right. Connor said it.
You go ahead. It's okay. Fine. It doesn't matter.
Well, Connor, calling out Fiona Staples.
No problem.
No. She's just as twisted and bizarre. I mean, like in one scene when he's walking around the pleasure planet, there's a bunch of dudes in a human naked dudes with marching band hats on doing a pyramid getting whipped. Like, it was just like this is just, this stuff is crazy. And it's just like, and it's done in a way that is recognizable and understandable, but also so out there where it's just like, you got to look at it twice and be like, what? So.
We had sex already in this comic with the TV head people early on, but I didn't expect full on penetration.
Yeah, there you go.
Didn't expect it.
Yep. So
don't have a problem with it, but didn't expect it.
I thought it was a bargain.
Bit of a surprise. Oh.
but yeah, and some of the stuff in those when he's walking around the page when he's smoking the joint, there's just some weird stuff going on there. and I just saw the dinosaur penis. Or whatever that is. But yeah, this book is great. It's not for kids, obviously, but for us adults, it is fantastic. So I just couldn't, when we get down to the pick of the week percentages, you'll see exactly how many of you agreed with me on Saga, but it's a juggernaut. It is probably hands down, right now, one of the best comics being published right now.
And it's doing well, sales-wise, successful. Yeah. It's good. Good to see.
Yeah. Which is just wonderful. So Saga number 4. I mean, it's still early. The only 4 issues in. You can still jump on if you haven't. There was somebody at my shop who isn't buying it because he didn't like the end of Ex Machina, and we were all yelling. Ridiculous. We're like, "You're missing out! You're missing out!" it blew me away, and it's tough because you don't want to. We'd already written about it twice. We already talked about it twice. I already picked it once. so it's. But did I pick it or no?
I didn't. Did Josh do the second
one? Oh, right. Josh did the second one. Yeah, no, I wrote
Thanks for taking credit for another thing.
I wrote the advance review, and Connor, you wrote the other 2 reviews. Okay.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay,
yes.
Yeah. So we've all picked it. Everyone who matters at iFanboys picked it.
Yeah.
So you should be reading it as well, too.
Connor, can you tell Ron the next time he does a script to not put all of his picks at the beginning in one chunk and to switch them up a little bit?
All right, well, let's go off script then, Josh. Why don't you take it from here?
All right, my pick of the week was probably Reed Gunther number 10.
Yep.
It was probably not hurt by the fact that they sent us what is a video that's probably better than anything we've ever posted video-wise on our website.
Not probably. Definitely.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Well, either way, it got me very excited for the issue, and I read it, and I thought that it just it sort of blew away my expectations. This is the last issue for the foreseeable future, and for that, I blame.
It's a shame that it's the last issue.
I blame the readers.
Yes,
I just want people listening here who have heard us say it's real good and then never even bothered to try it. It's your fault. That the joy has to die.
Yep.
What we have here is a situation where we had left off and Sterling the Bear had been taken over by a demon, and Reed decided that the best way to get him out of it was to make a deal with the devil. But he decides at the last second that not only should Sterling be freed of this demon, but he should also get the jar of the world's best pickles, and he, and his lady friend should have a machete that never dulls. And he's like, sounds like a good deal. I'm going to sign that deal. And then, you know, the devil tricks him because that's what happens. And there's a big fight. But for me, and I was like, this is all fun, whatever. And then it turns out that Reed has to fight the demon in his own mind. And that's when it got crazy. Because that's when it got really fun for me, because basically the explains of, you never fought in the mind before. You're used to fighting the real world. And Reed's like, oh, it's about imagination. And you turn the page to this amazing double page spread that is Reed's whole imaginative way to fight the bad guy. You've got cows with Gatling guns strapped to their back, and you've got, you know, he has the Statue of Liberty's torch arm and a machete in the one hand, and all the bullets have faces, and it was just this big old fun imaginative page. And then the whole thing was kind of a big fight, and it was a really good time. It did feel like a culmination to this was probably the best issue that they've done, because they just got to put everything into it. And if you sort of see the enthusiasm that they brought to that video, for example, well, because they're young, you know, they still have a lot of energy. It was just a really, really nice issue. And I blame you. Everyone.
Me?
Not, well, you didn't buy it either.
But you can blame Connor. It's okay. They are so, like, Shane and Chris Houghton are so much fun. Like, you watch the video, you see them, like, and when I interviewed them at Ape last year, it's like, they very rarely do I actually see creators translate their fun personality so much into a book.
Yeah, we've seen the opposite.
Yes, that's for sure. But this is just an absolute shame that it's ending here, and I hope that they come back and do more. I've heard, you know, they're going to go off and they've got bigger, better plans, and they've got things to do, and they're, you know, their careers are going to do well and all that sort of stuff. And we're hoping I hope they do another book. But man, this Reed Gunther was really something special.
It was sort of a comic for anybody.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it was a good time.
Yeah. Too bad. Well, there were
I heard from a guy that I know that some other guy I know really didn't like the comedian number one.
We're just really blowing off the script, aren't we?
The funny thing is
that I had a whole plan. This is all the script was done for a reason, you know. But I indulged you, Josh, and this is what happened.
You tried to throw me under the bus, and I picked it up and ran with it.
No, I didn't. But anyway, so the big press book of the week, or the big, you know, notoriety in the book was Astonishing X-Men number 51, which featured the wedding of North Star and his boyfriend Kyle. I assume I'm the only one who picked it up.
Yep.
Yes.
Yeah. Because I'm the only one who supports gay marriage. There you have it.
I was going to buy it. I was going to start buying it with this issue. And then I was like, wait a minute.
it was a fun wedding issue. You know what I mean? Like,
this is the kind of issues that are fun, yeah. You know, gay or otherwise.
Lots of cameos, lots of really interesting things. Mayor Bloomberg randomly getting some ice in his lemonade from Iceman, which was cool. I did not know Beast was ordained as a minister.
Of course, Beast is ordained.
Of course he is. So Beast was the officiant. I'm wondering, and I was wondering why. So if the wedding was in Central Park in New York, and if North Star, I'm pretty sure North Star and Kyle were living in Vancouver last we saw them in Alpha Flight. I don't know why though, and with Wolverine everybody up in Westchester. I mean, Central Park's a great location if you can get it. But I wonder why it was in New York.
Well, it's because it was really more for everybody else.
Yeah, I guess I suppose.
Like, that you didn't want to have everybody. See, I did this for my wedding. Everybody would have had to fly to Vancouver.
Right. So instead, they fly to Boston. Thanks.
Well, yeah, but it was easy.
Yeah. Anyway, it would have been easier if it was
Boston,
in New York.
Chinatown.
But,
yeah.
Anyway, but what was really neat at the very end of the issue was there's a little full page ad from the city of New York with tips on looking to tie the knot in New York City and like 10 tips on getting married in New York, which is really cool. That was a nice little kind of mix into it.
Some partnership with the government, which is why it was in New York.
Yeah. No, yeah, I'm sure. And Marvel in New York. And also, is gay marriage legal in Canada?
Yes. Is it? Canada, yes. It's been legal for a while.
Okay. But anyway, yeah, no, but it was good. I mean, and it was the second part of a first part story. It started off with a little action, and but
have you been reading this book the whole time, or did you come on for this?
I come on and off. I go on and off based off the creative team. I actually didn't get the engagement issue. I didn't get the proposal issue, but I did get this issue. So.
Which you knew it was going to happen.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So, but yeah, great stuff. Mike Perkins' art, which is always a treat.
He's great. I think he's off the Stephen King thing now.
Yeah,
the
stand. He's on that. He's like the ongoing artist on Astonishing X-Men now. So, yeah,
good stuff.
So fun time. So yeah, congratulations, North Star and Kyle. My store had a line. There was people waiting to get in to get it.
Really?
Yep.
San Francisco.
Yep. There you go. Of all markets. Anyway, yes,
so it worked.
So before Watchmen, Comedian number one came out.
So was I wrong about that?
About what?
Did you not like it?
This was rough. This is a tough pill to swallow.
I was enjoying it for about half of it. Because Ron told me he didn't like it before I read it, so I had that going in my head. And for the first time, I was like, "No, this is pretty good. I know what Ron's problem is." And I went, "Oh, okay."
Now, what is the thing that got? Because here's the thing: I don't want to say I liked it, but I found it interesting, and I thought it was pretty well done, from a standpoint of fitting one thing into another thing.
Right,
and but they didn't though, because in Watchmen he killed Kennedy.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, see, now that's where I got mixed up because I couldn't remember. I was like, wait, was that just in the movie? Because
it was in the book too.
Okay, yeah. So
him and Nixon were in Dallas that day.
Yeah,
and now according to this, none of that happened. So
And what was with the weird suggestive gay overtone thing?
What do you mean? Yeah.
With Jackie accusing him of loving the brother? You know what I mean? Like the. That whole scene, the Jackie him talking, was like it was kind of suggestive.
I didn't get that, but yeah. I just thought
brotherly, like the brothers were all really close and they would play football and stuff. And that's
sure, yeah, no, I get that. Yeah, no, I know, but like there's a.
I thought she was going to have sex with him.
She says you love them, and he goes, no, I respect them, and she's like, right, you love them, you know, like, and I talked to other people about it, and other people picked up on that as well.
I thought. See, the problem with knowing, having in Watchmen knowing that he was the killer, or at least in Watchmen he was. So then the whole issue, I was waiting for that twist. I thought Jackie was going to hire him to kill her husband, and that would have been pretty controversial.
Yeah.
Or something like that. But since they veered off in a different direction, it changed the story. I did like the idea that the assassination of Kennedy would sort of stop the petty crime, and they would both stop and watch the TV in the middle of the
yeah this. that was somewhat clever. Yeah.
I liked that, but other than that, it just the idea that it was so far off, and I guess it's possible they could reveal later on that somehow he was still there, although I don't see how.
Yeah,
seems a pretty major departure from the established continuity of Watchmen.
Well, I'm just upset that Kennedy died at the end of the issue because I was looking forward to more pages of football betting. Weird.
Yeah, put 40 down on Dallas.
What'd you think of J.G. Jones?
It's all right.
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like it's not what I would expect for him.
Yeah, but I bet he comes out on time.
Yeah, it's true.
You know, yeah. was it how many inkers? I didn't look.
No, I don't even think any.
Yeah, just J.G. Jones.
Look at that.
And Alex Sinclair on color and Clem Robbins on letters.
Okay, so over under Clem Robbins is good.
Yeah,
over under on how many inkers will be on issue 3?
Yeah, we'll find out.
4, 3 inkers.
Yeah,
I'll take that bet. Me and my brother.
I'm just gonna comment that was pretty awful, but also awesome at the same time.
You were like a millimeter away from the Southern Colonel. Also,
and you know what? You went for it and you committed.
I
can respect. I'm gonna go out and say it. Avengers X-Men number 6 was pretty awesome. Not only was it pretty awesome, but it sort of shows the glaring problem with the overall series, which is that this is Act 2, which is 6 issues in out of 12.
Right.
And I think the biggest problem with the series has been Act 1 took half the series.
Yep.
And now we're going to cram in the rest of the story within these last 6 issues.
Well, I struggled with Avengers vs. X-Men number 6 because there was a moment in the first third of the book where they had me.
Mm-hmm.
Where they got me. They totally got me. Do you want to guess what it was? It was with one caption box.
Oh, I don't know. What was it?
It was when so basically, for those not reading Avengers vs. X-Men, you know, now the Phoenix Five.
They actually named that. I thought you were joking.
Oh,
last
so
time.
Did I. I had no idea. I was just as surprised as you were. So Cyclops, Emma, Colossus, Namor, and Magic all have powers, you know, a little bit of the Phoenix power. And this is a week later, and they've built Utopia to be much bigger and much grander and much more beautiful. And they're basically going around the world now and just being a force of good. You know, helping and fixing things and using the Phoenix power for good, you know, like whether it's helping with, you know, food and or making it rain or whatever they might be doing, they're helping.
At strip clubs?
And, yes, they just go to strip clubs and just making it rain all over the place.
And so then we get another glimpse of it when Iron Fist is reporting back into Captain America about how they were fighting Hydra and Zaz, and then all of a sudden you know, then all of a sudden Colossus shows up and Iron Fist is telling Cap, and he says, he walked out of the siege courageous like a metal god. Yeah. Siege courageous, you got me. What does that mean? What is that? Like, and because that's a nod back to the Siege Perilous and Claremont stuff and stuff like that. But then as soon as it gets there, they just immediately veer off into all the shit that's been marring it down over the past five issues. Kunlun stuff, Hope shit, Avengers. Apparently the Beast doesn't agree with anybody.
Beast is quick. How good is Olivier Coipel drawing the Beast though?
Really good. Really, really good.
Yeah.
You know, and then it ends with Cyclops, you know, challenging the UN to, you know, to stop war and that sort of thing. And then we get this double size. It felt really long.
Yeah.
But then we get and then now the Avengers are back to thinking they need to kidnap Hope. So we get some ridiculous looking costumes that they're wearing, I don't understand the infiltration costumes they were wearing, the skydiving costumes, and for some reason they want to snatch out Hope, and you got Thor grabbing Hope, which just makes no sense. And then Scarlet Witch shows up, and it ends with Cyclops going, I know what has to happen now, no more Avengers, and we're back in House of M shit.
Well, I mean, I think House of M had to be the touchstone, because this is where it all began, right? All this modern day Marvel stuff sort of began with House of M. So if they're capping off this era, it's probably appropriate to go full circle. But I thought if this issue was issue 3 or 4, maybe even, you'd have a completely different miniseries. Well, I think that's the problem.
So it gets into, so the other AVX books that came out this week were New Avengers 27, Secret Avengers 28, and Uncanny X-Men 14. New Avengers and Secret Avengers and some of the stuff in Avengers vs. X-Men is the example of there. I don't know if it's because there are so many writers, but there's too much going on. There are too many ideas going on.
Yeah.
If you ask me what happened in New Avengers with Bendis and Deodato and continuing the history of the tie of Iron Fist and Kunlun to Phoenix and ending with Hope having to be trained by Spider-Man, you don't need that. Cut it. You don't need it. Secret Avengers was more Remender Renato Geddes in space with the whole Captain Marvel thing.
Why'd they bring him back?
They brought him back just to kill him again.
Yeah, exactly.
No idea. You don't need it. Cut it. You know what I mean? Like, there's so much excess. But meanwhile, in Uncanny X-Men number 14, Kieran Gillen just decides to write a whole issue about Sinister, who built a city underground. And it's awesome. This has nothing to do with Avengers vs. X-Men, and it's just a glimpse into Sinister London, which Mr. Sinister has built underground between the surface and where the Moloids live.
Wow.
And it basically ends with him, Sinister, saying, I know that when now that Cyclops and all of them have the Phoenix Force, they're going to come for me eventually, and basically saying, you know, bring it on. And that's how it ends. So it's a little glimpse towards what's coming in Uncanny X-Men, but it was just like, what?
You know, in Sinister London, you still can't see much sun, so there's not much difference between real London and Sinister London.
Yeah, by the way, Sinister London looked an awful lot like the London in Arrested Development.
Wee Britain,
little Wee Britain. Yeah.
Sinister wants to watch out for Poppins.
Oh, but the one thing about Uncanny X-Men, aside from story, had Dustin Weaver art. Which you might remember from
SHIELD. For Sinister London, that sounds exactly like what you'd want to have.
Dustin Weaver, it's great. It just continually reminds you, you know, if you've been missing SHIELD, how great Dustin Weaver is.
He's amazing.
It was great stuff. But
I actually don't mind the whole Iron Fist tie-in, because it's nice to have someone else involved in the story. And obviously Iron Fist is not going to be very important to the whole resolution of the story. So it's nice to have someone minor become a major, you know, Iron Fist is a minor character at this point.
Yeah. I don't know. It just reeks of the, oh yeah, you know the thing we told you about? Yeah, no, it's this, you know? And it's like, and I don't know. I just feel like it's really extraneous. And if you just focused on, the problem in hand, which is what they're doing with the Phoenix Force and the conflict between the Avengers vs. X-Men, and even if you got to bring in the House of M bullshit and the Scarlet Witch bullshit, I just feel like, unless, you know, and I'm sure it's going to come back around and Iron Fist is going to be, it's going to play some important role and maybe Hope's going to become Iron Fist or who knows, I don't even know what, you know, but it just, right now, I just feel like there's too much glut.
No, I agree with that. The tie-ins are completely unnecessary, and they muddle everything up.
Yeah,
I really just, the Secret Avengers one really bothered me. It's like you bring back Captain Marvel. Every time they bring him back, they cheapen his original death a little bit more.
Yep. Yeah,
and
agreed.
There was no reason at all to bring him back this time whatsoever. He didn't do anything. Yeah. They brought him back simply to kill him and have Carol become the new Captain Marvel.
Yeah.
I got two comments.
Mm-hmm.
First one, I think that Ron would be okay with all of this if Bendis hadn't brushed him off about what was in the closet.
Yeah, possibly.
I think if he had just finished that at some point, then all of this would be easier to take. Two, I'm not reading this, but I enjoy these discussions. I sat back and I just listened.
Yeah.
One thing we should mention is that I thought the issue was gorgeous. Olivier Coipel, I haven't really seen since the first issue of Mighty Thor. He's amazing.
Wonderful. Yeah, no, he's great. Yeah, he's really good. And it was beautiful. It was fun to read. I mean, this is I agree. This is the best issue of the series so far.
It's 12 one every 2 weeks.
It's 12 one every 2 weeks. And it's funny because I totally could have seen like what they totally could have done. Like if this was a couple of years ago, whatever, you know, it could have, the quote unquote event could have ended with the Phoenix Five and we would have had a year of the Phoenix Five.
Yeah. Phoenix Force Five.
Yeah.
I like your name better.
Yeah. The Phoenix Force
Five. I really opened it up and saw it in the description and went, he wasn't kidding. I thought that was a joke.
I thought it was a joke too. I didn't. No, I mean, I meant it as a joke. I didn't even know. But
based off an Uma Thurman line from.
I know exactly.
Wow, a throwaway scene even in that movie.
Yeah, I know. But yeah. So good on them for, you know, trying to make this closed and condensed and what, you know, or whatever it might be. But I don't know. It's just feeling long in the tooth. That's all. And I wanted more Siege Courageous. Like I honestly would have liked to have seen more of the Phoenix Five doing what they're doing. You know,
taking all the nukes away.
So Xavier shows up in the beginning
with a very jaunty scarf.
For what? For why did Xavier show up? That didn't go anywhere.
Exposition.
Yeah.
Yeah. Basically.
Crap.
Who wrote this one?
Hickman. That's why it's the best one.
His tone and voice is really good for this kind of story. It's kind of, there's a lot of gravitas and sort of mystery without being bombastic in it.
I feel like gravitas is his middle name.
Hey,
it's Lawrence.
Hey, creators and publishers, you're looking for a way to get your book in front of as many people as possible, as quickly as possible, and easily as possible. And graphically is the best solution to do that. Upload your book, your comic book, your children's book, your sketchbook, your photography book, just about any kind of graphic-based book. You can do it in a few simple steps, and you're on your way to getting into Amazon's Kindle store, Barnes & Noble's Nook store, Kobo, and, of course, the Apple iBook store. There's no need to have readers find a specific app just for comics or just made for you. You can go get your book in front of all the people at your local digital bookstore. That was me going weird. I don't know why. You go there where people are looking for books in the digital bookstores. And with 29% of all adults now owning tablets and e-reader devices in sales in 2011, increasing over 300% from the year before to over 3 million e-books sold, that's a lot of potential customers to see your book. You can find a full list of pricing and services at our website. Head over to graphically.com for more details.
Excellent. So, lots of stuff going on at Graphically, so stay tuned because a couple of weeks are going to be interesting.
I want to know what it is about Dark Horse Presents number 13 that made you want to say something about it.
It was almost pick of the week.
Yes,
it was in the running. It was in the top my top four choices of pick of the week. It was in.
Why?
In I'll tell you why. Ready?
Yeah.
Phil Noto, okay. Carlos Speed McNeil, John Layman and Sam Keith, Francesco Francavilla, Jeff Darrow, Mike Barron and Steve Rude, and Dean Motter. That's why it almost got it.
That's a strong lineup.
It has the best lineup of artists consistently of any book.
This might be right now the best moment for Dark Horse Presents. You've got the first chapter of Ghost, written by Kelly Sue DeConnick with art by Phil Noto, which, if you remember, Ghost was the old character from the 90s that went Dark Horse.
Adam Hughes did that book.
Then you had The Creep with written by John Arcudi with art by Jonathan Case. Another chapter of Finder by Carlos B. McNeil. You have Criminal Macabre, written by Steve Niles, art by Christopher Mitten. You have An Alien Story, written by Layman, with art by Sam Keith, which is awesome. You have The Occultist, with a story by Tim Seeley and art by Victor Drunou. Black Beetle by Frank Avila. A Profile, a Cross Story, a prose story with art by Jeff Darrow. Chapter 2 of The New Nexus with Mike Barron and Steve Rude, which is classic. And then the icing on the cake is Chapter 2 of Mr. X by Dean Motter. If you've never read Mr. X, it's awesome. And this is new Mr. X stuff, which is even awesomer. So
I think I know why you didn't make a pick of the week.
Why?
This would take forever to write about.
Yeah, it really would have.
it's a long review. But not even done.
Dark Horse Presents really – the promise of Dark Horse Presents is kind of coming to fruition in last issue and this issue. So, yeah. Journey into Mystery, I just wanted to call out because this is the keen eye – keen Britpop music fans will notice that this is the subtle phonogram Loki crossover that Kieran Gill has always wanted. Because the story has magical things happening in places in England, and the one of them that he calls out was the Hacienda, which is the club in Manchester where New Order and the Smiths and everybody played. So Kieran Gillen's crazy. That's all.
He got away with it, though, goddamn.
He got away. He somehow slipped through the cracks.
Nice work. Yep. So Wonder Woman number 10 with guest artist Kano.
Tony Akins.
And Tony Akins.
Both. What happened here? I genuinely got lost, and I went back a bunch of times, and I just, like, I don't know. I'm
close to dropping this.
Well, Hell wanted to marry Wonder Woman, and tried to force her to in this issue, and she said no and broke free, and then she shot him with
the
arrow.
Yeah, but she was already there, because she was going to get married, and then the whole thing was that she was going to put her head in the lasso noose, and it was going to make her say whether he loved her or not.
And she did.
And she said
she loved
yes,
yeah.
Which is what he thought she wasn't going to do. And then his part was, well, now I bind you, because I thought she had agreed to get married unless she was never going to. It wasn't clear. This was for me. This is the point where Azzarello always goes wrong for me. In that I'll be digging something and really enjoying it, and then all of a sudden, at some point, it just gets unclear.
Yep.
About where it is we're going. And it's happened to me, like, I've been into his stories, you know, for the first, you know, 20%, and then it just starts to not make sense to me. And I feel like I'm missing something. And I'm good at reading comics. But I was lost. And this is, you know, again, this is my favorite book out of the relaunch. This is the one I was really enjoying. And you know, not the art. I get that. You know, they got to move things around. There's been like four or five. I think maybe four fill-ins that aren't Cliff Chang at this point.
More than I feel like every time I pick it up, it's Tony Akins.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm a little disappointed. That's I guess my point. And I don't know what happened, and it's annoying me.
Yeah. Well, conversely, Glory number 27, which often gets dismissed as like a Wonder Woman clone or whatever. This might have been the best issue of the series so far. This issue,
I think it was.
This issue was awesome. This was really good. And if anybody's curious about how different or unique Glory is than not the Wonder Woman archetype, this represents it. But you liked it too, Josh?
Yeah, I thought it was the strongest of them too.
Yeah.
Just lots of really big wacky stuff, and I really liked the twist at the end.
Yep.
Good. The thing is, I don't know what to expect from this book, so I want it to veer when I think I do know what's going to happen, and that was exactly what happened. So yep. I thought that was great, and I thought Ross Gamble really brought it in terms of just this giant otherworldly threat that was going on the whole. These big, wacky, I mean, monsters that don't look like any monsters I've ever seen,
yep.
You know, maybe from sort of strange Japanese animation kind of monsters, but it was impressive.
Yeah, no, Ross Gamble really coming into his own, and this book is just getting stronger and stronger and stronger, so... Good to see it. So.
Yes, it was.
Excellent. So those are the books that we enjoyed this week. Go to ifanboy.com/comics. We got the full list of comics that came out. And you can go and you can rate them and you can make your picks of the week. And we're going to go through the top five picks of the week as selected by the iFanboy community. coming in at number 5. Venom number 19 with 0.8% of the picks of the week. Interesting. Number 4 was Wonder Woman number 10 with 2.2% of the picks of the week. Number 3 was Josh's pick of the week with Reed Gunther number 10 with 4.2% of the pick of the week.
Pretty good.
Very good, yeah. And I don't know if you can see the writing on the wall where this is going, but when the number 3 book has got under 5%, the number 2 book was Connor's pick of the week with Avengers vs. X-Men.
Hey, I didn't
6.
Say that. I thought I really liked it. I don't know. Actually, didn't make. Oh, Saga's my pick of the week.
Okay. Avengers vs. X-Men number 6, the best issue of the series so far, got 5.8% of the picks of the week. So many people agreed with that. But the number 1 pick of the week, as chosen by you, the listening audience, Saga number 4 with 81.2% of the picks of the week.
Somewhere Scott Snyder is shivering.
Yeah. All of a sudden, there's a disturbance.
I want to read this next one because I want to say the name.
Sure, go for it. So on to the user reviews.
First up from Buck Mulligan of Daredevil 14. He gave the story a 4 out of 5 and the art a 4 out of 5. And the pick of the week percentage was 0.4%. And it says, Doom might just be enough. Judging by the action in issue number 14 to inject a little life into the Omega Drive storyline, which has been underwhelming at best, issues 10.1, 11, and 13, including the Omega Effect crossover issues of Avenging Spider-Man number 5 and Punisher number 10, had me worried that we'd seen the best of what had been a great Wade run. That said, the most compelling part of issue 14, much like the other recent strong entry issue number 12, deals not with Daredevil but with Matt Murdock's life and his relationship with Foggy Nelson. We know Matt has cobbled his life back together, but can the long-suffering Foggy take any more? And if not, does Matt's life unravel again? These are the questions that will have me coming back for issues 15 and 16 and on and on. Somni's art, particularly in action-packed and tightly focused panels, excellent.
I feel like the shine is a little off the luster of Daredevil.
I just don't like this Omega Drive story. I'm done with.
I think it's really bogging it down.
Well, we're getting away from all the things that we really liked about the first handful of them.
Yep.
Which is what the reviewer Buck Mulligan calls out, who I believe is a porno star / stereo salesman. that might be wrong.
I liked the storyline when it was that crossover. I feel like it shouldn't have continued on past that point.
Yep, agreed.
But I also I like Samny. We all like Samny a lot. I just don't know if he's perfectly right for this book.
I agree.
In that the previous artists have all been very fluid. There's a lot of very graceful fluidity to their work, and that's not his style. It's a different kind of style. And I think when Daredevil jumps around, it looks different than he used to. I did enjoy this issue though. I like the idea of him losing his senses one by one is kind of terrifying at the end, and he thinks he's safe, and he's actually not. It was kind of heartbreaking, but I don't know. I think Ron's right. Something about this is not as wonderful as it was before. I don't think it was that storyline. It was
I mean, think about this issue and think about the recent issues, and think back to the issue where he burst into the party with the shirt that says "I'm not Daredevil."
Mm-hmm. Issue 1.
Right. No, that wasn't issue 1. That was the Christmas
issue.
That was the Christmas issue. It's gone back down into that little darkness kind of thing, which is
Well, it always had to, and they'd hinted at it from the very first one. I just think that we wanted to stay in that world that was set up in the first couple of them a little longer.
Yeah.
And keep it. I think it was fun to keep it small.
Yep.
And instead, it got really, really big. I do like when he woke up and he was in Latveria. Yeah. I mean, here's the thing: like the whole issue was really well done. I mean, like when we say it's not as good, it's like 4.25 stars instead of 5.
Yeah,
you know, like and just that little difference is just like I was like, oh, do we have stuff to do back in New York? Let's get past this drive thing. Just give it to Reed Richards. Call it a day.
Yeah. Anyway, all right. Well, so Daredevil, we'll see. All Red's coming on, so I'm excited for that. But
microwave,
no problem with Somni.
Microwave 25 reviewed Mars Attacks number 1, gave a story of 4 out of 5 and the art of 5 out of 5, and 0.5% made their pick of the week. And Microwave 25 says, Layman manages to create quite the comedy sketch as two hick farmers stumble across a stereotypical flying saucer. Luck and good fortune seem to be the main theme of this issue, and the irony of it all pours through the pair of idiot farmers. Of all the people in the world to make first contact with an intelligent alien race, Earth stirs up the bottom of the barrel. Trying to make a quick buck from their findings, things predictably go sour and get some memorable scenes from John McCrae. McCrae does a great job of keeping that 60s look and feel of the book while adding his own contemporary style to it. The Martians look fantastic, and some of their facial expressions are priceless. His countryside landscapes and scenes of space are strangely quaint and picturesque amongst all the impending terror and doom and colorist. Andrew Elder deserves huge credit for making these scenes really pop. Mars Attacks may be a relatively old and simple idea, but don't let that sway you. This is truly a fun read with a book that doesn't take itself too seriously. Maybe we need more of that in modern comics. I'm excited to see where Lehman takes these merciless aliens and how they deal with 2012.
I didn't know about this. John McCrae.
John Lehman of Chew fame and John McCrae.
Also lead singer of Cake. Probably a different guy.
IDW released it. Mars Attacks number one. And you could, if you're a big Mars Attacks fan, get one or all 58 covers. They did 58 covers. And you could spend $199.99 and get a special limited edition box set of all the issues with all the covers of the same issue.
What's the potential market for that?
Does IDW not know what year it is?
Listen, they've gone through this and done it before. They did it with Godzilla, and apparently it worked. So,
well, the thing with Godzilla was weren't there a lot of those like retailer specific companies?
Yeah, they drew their name, their stores.
Yeah,
they're just variations on a gimmick.
They took the classic Mars Attacks 1962 Tops card set and used the art from each – the Wally Wood art from each card for each cover. It's just a different Mars attack scene.
Yeah. Crazy.
Yeah. That's it. Anyway, so interesting. I read it and it was fun.
Cover 37.
Yeah, exactly. But I read it and it was fun. It was neat. So good times. So go to ifanboy.com/comics. You can do your pull list and do your ratings and write your reviews, and we will highlight them on the show when they are worthy.
I liked that movie. I was one of the people that liked that
movie. I love that movie. That movie is great.
Yeah. Jim Brown punching aliens in their big domes.
Yeah, Nicholson as the president.
Yeah, I enjoy that.
With the great sound effect of the aliens.
That was specifically the part I liked most about the movie.
Yeah,
I like how they yelled.
I saw that in the theater. Let's do some emails.
Let's do them. First one comes from Alex from London, who says, I had a question about Amazing Spider-Man. I used to read the trades of Amazing Spider-Man before the disgrace of One More Day / Brand New Day. Although I've stopped reading this, I want to get back in, having loved Spider-Man since the 90s cartoon. So now we know that the term of disgrace is what, like 3 years?
Well, that was a long time ago.
It was.
What is the best story to jump back in on? I know there are new characters such as Anti-Venom and Mary Jane still isn't with Peter. I want to jump back in without spending most of the reading experience being confused. Any help would be appreciated.
Wasn't it really good for a while?
It was great.
It's been really good for a long time. I mean,
since One More Day.
Yeah.
Brand New Day was 2008, so that was
4 years.
Yeah, 4 years ago.
Four years ago, yeah, man. Yeah.
There's been 900 issues since then.
that's why it feels longer.
Honestly, I think you're gonna have to roll with it in terms of the new characters and that. But like the whole Brand New Day storyline was good. The Gauntlet was great. Spider Island was great.
Now, as long as you know the basics of Spider-Man, that's really – this is the thing that always bugs me about some comic fans is that you don't need to know everything. Just you know who Spider-Man is. He's Spider-Man. He's Peter Parker. He's in New York.
You could
very easily
pick up whatever the next issue of the regular one is, jump back on and start going. If you wanted to go backwards, you know, there was a bunch of great writers switching on and off, and they all did – the stories were fairly standalone. There was like some great Joe Kelly ones. There were some great Mark Waid stories. You guys really like the Zeb Wells ones.
Yeah, I mean, they were all really great. And I said it I guess the solicits for September for Marvel have the trade paperback of Spider Island. I thought Spider Island was awesome. Mm-hmm. Spider Island was a lot of fun, and it had its ups and its downs, but it was a big kind of spider contained Manhattan New York story, and it was cool. It was cool to see. So. When I think of the past 4 years of Spider-Man, the one thing that jumps out at me was those series of Gauntlet stories, the Rogues Gallery ones.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Those were great. The Kraven story, the Rhino story, the Sandman story. They had heart, they were tragic,
Yeah, that's true.
Yep. All right, cool. Next email.
Sean from Manchester, Maryland says, the question I've been thinking about most as of lately. How much though? is how big story arcs like Avengers versus X-Men and Spider-Man are
Men.
A separate
Spider-Man.
Spider-Man are a separate title instead of being interwoven stories between different books, and how he really has been thinking about this. How I feel they lose the big impact by being different stories. I feel Spider-Man would have worked better, and I feel new readers – I feel like it has more weight if a story – of a story if instead of holding its own – it's hot.
Your podcast –
what are we going to learn? 340 episodes. Don't let Josh read.
Eat it. Instead of holding its own separate title, it ran through Amazing Spider-Man and Ultimate Spider-Man. I feel it would bring new readers to multiple books and maybe hook them for the long run of those series, and the consequences of the stories would stick better if they did go between books. How do you guys feel about this approach to big stories within comic book worlds? Also, does anybody else feel, after reading the first issue of Spider-Man, that Brian Bendis is a fan of Snyder's Batman book with the concept of talking about the love of the city and how they're both in love with Spider-Man in New York and Batman in Gotham? The Scozo of Manchester, Maryland. I don't think that was my fault.
Basically saying, shouldn't Avengers X-Men take place in those books, Avengers books and X-Men books? Shouldn't Spider-Man take place in Ultimate Spider-Man and not in separate miniseries? It's basically what it boils down to.
Six of one, half dozen of another.
And
his second question about this, is Bendis a fan of Snyder's Batman book? I don't think Snyder or Bendis are the first people to have characters and cities be interested in each other.
That's always been that.
Yeah. The whole Jeff Johns' whole thing was that Flash loves Keystone City. It's right. Not.
And Rucka's whole thing was Batman and Gotham, and you know, like it's not
especially those two characters particularly have always been about their city. So that's nothing new. So basically, he doesn't want events to take place in their own minis. He wants the events to take place in the issues themselves.
I don't want to sound like a jerk, but you sound like a collector. I mean, like that sounds like a thing like I want it to be. I don't want to have to buy another miniseries. I want my unbroken run of things. It's just like it's a marketing decision that is probably based on sales more than anything.
Yeah.
Of course it's based on sales. They sell a standalone. Well, but the thing is, damn if they don't. If they took place in the minis, people would complain that it wasn't a standalone story in a miniseries that they could buy on their own.
Right. I mean, it's funny because this example of Avengers vs. X-Men and Spider-Man are two very different things. Because Avengers vs. X-Men is a standalone miniseries, but it's with tendrils. It's got all these, you know, crossovers and things like that, and not crossovers, but you know, tie-ins like we were talking about with Secret Avengers and New Avengers and
the Civil
X-Men.
War model.
It's exactly.
We've seen this model for years.
Where Spider-Man is, as far as I can tell, completely contained, and it's like a story that takes place in between issues of Amazing and Ultimate Spider-Man.
I got to tell you, I like that.
Yeah.
I like that the same way that I liked it with the Avengers Prime, if you want to look at it that way.
Yeah.
So personally, like I'm there's a story going on in Ultimate Spider-Man right now, and it would get derailed, and I don't want that.
See, now what's interesting is that so if you go back to Secret War, which was the crossover that started it all, right? Or you know, Secret War 1 was contained in a miniseries. It was a 12-issue miniseries that went on for a whole year. And all of the books picked up they started Secret War in the regular series, and then the next issue was after Secret War, was a year later.
Mm-hmm.
Not a year later, but after Secret War ended. And so you had all these kind of things, like I remember Kitty and Peter broke up, and they broke up in Secret War, but in Uncanny X-Men they just were broken up. So like if they took that model now, people's heads would explode.
Yeah.
So... Mm-hmm. It's like Connor said, damned if you do, damned if you don't. You know.
So. Were there another time? There were crossover titles. Yeah, they all crossed.
No, Secret Wars 2 is when they went crazy with the titles.
I'm looking at their Wikipedia entry, all the crossover titles.
Oh, were there really? I thought Secret Wars was contained.
There's no way they would have contained it. They would have fired the person in charge of that.
I thought Secret War was totally contained in Secret War 2.
Secret War 2, they went nuts.
Yeah, they went. Every book had it. Yeah.
There was 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. There's less than 10 in crossover books.
But. Oh, okay, yeah, that's not that bad.
But Secret War 2 is when like every book crossed over with every single Marvel book. But that's the model. That's where it started, basically, with Secret War. I think the modern crossover started with Secret Wars, I think.
Yeah.
I think it's really about, 84. You know, it's like having their cake and eating it, too. Yep. Because the people who just want to buy the Avengers book that they're buying, they're going to keep buying it. But they're probably also going to buy the other thing. So they have their bases covered more than anything.
Yeah.
Mm.
I don't know. It's a quandary.
If you want to write in, you can send it to contact@ifanboy.com via the email. And now voicemail? We're going to do voicemail? Yeah.
We're going to do a voicemail about another story, another topic that's been in the news.
Hey, guys. This is Chris from Pennsylvania. I'm just wondering what you guys thought about the recent re-envisioning of the JSA being younger, which, in my opinion, kind of ruins the characters, because I like them being older and teaching the heroes of tomorrow. And in particular, I was wondering what you thought about the re-envisioning of Alan Scott being gay. And I was wondering if you guys thought it was more of a publicity stunt because of what Marvel is doing with the gay marriage. Thanks, guys. Love the show. Keep it up.
I got to tell you, I'm a little afraid to answer this. I don't want to deal with the blowback.
Well, here
I shouldn't use that word.
Here's the deal. Whether you want to believe it or not, I've talked to James Robinson about this in February.
Mm-hmm.
So whether or not the Astonishing X-Men wedding thing was known back then, like, I believe James when he said he's been working on this since last year.
I really do think it is a coincidence that the two things are happening.
Yeah.
Because the idea itself, the very concept of marriage equality, is very much in the zeitgeist of our thinking. And these comic book companies are very aware of what's in the zeitgeist. That's what they're writing on.
They've always done a good job of examining what's going on in the real world. So the fact that this is one of the preeminent issues in the real world right now is the reason why you're getting it.
Yep.
So let's take these things one at a time. I'll tell you right now, the thing I find more upsetting is I liked the JSA as they were.
I love the JSA.
As sort of older, had been around in the 40s. I think there's something really interesting about that. However, I can completely recognize that that has never been a big payoff for DC Comics, and you don't just stick with something because you've been doing it forever,
right,
necessarily.
And but they're also, I mean, if they're truly going back to their roots of these characters, then they started out as young guys in the 40s, so that's what they're starting out again.
Yeah.
I mean, they weren't the old veterans when they first appeared. They were young guys in their 20s, like the characters heroes are now.
It's just that they were in the 40s and then they got stuck there. But if they did a book now about young superheroes in the 40s, well, it'd be called Before Watchmen. But
no, think about it. Imagine if they did like a superhero book that was all like Mad Men.
It would sell.
I'm kidding.
Like, it just wouldn't. It would be great. We would love it.
It's called Minutemen.
And we would do 12%. You know, we would do 12,000 copies, and it would be canceled.
Yeah.
As far as Alan Scott being gay, as far as I'm concerned, and there's going to be people who disagree with me, Alan Scott was almost a blank slate, other than to a small cadre of really diehard fans.
Yep.
He was really just there. He wasn't being used. The only person who's used him with any real traction has been James Robinson himself.
Yep.
Over the last, yeah, but as a result of having what Robinson did, like, mm-hmm, they're related. And so, you know, if anybody's going to do it, he's the dude to do it. You know, I don't know. I couldn't tell you what Alan Scott's personal life was like. It doesn't not fit that he's a gay dude. Like, it doesn't, okay, fine.
I'm of the belief that he was always gay.
Could have been.
Yeah, it could have been. It doesn't. You never know. Like, and the thing is that, like, you're right. And from a character standpoint, he was a relatively blank slate. And it is just, you know, and I truly do believe, you know, when I talked to James, when I interviewed him, stuff like that, it's just an aspect of the character, and it's not going to define him. He's not the gay Avenger. It's not, you know what I mean? Like, this is just one, you know, it's an alternate universe, and there could be a gay Batman in another alternate universe. You know what I mean? Like,
I love that story.
Yeah. But,
You know, it's another one. Damned if they do, damned if they don't. Like, they want to have diversity, but, you know, and I wrote about this. They want to have diversity, but if they change an existing character, everybody gets mad. But if they bring out a new character, they don't get traction. Like, yep, you know, they got to pick their battles a little bit. And you know,
yep,
yeah.
So, all right. Well, speaking of Before Watchmen, we got one more voicemail.
Hey guys, I guess you've been picking up the new Before Watchmen series that DC's been putting out recently. So far, I think only Miniman's come out, but I don't know what time you're going to be filming the show at. I was wondering what you guys would think about an ongoing Before Watchmen series that just pretty much did the entire universe before Watchmen happened, and you would see all the stories that you don't usually get to see. Thanks. See ya.
I'm going to say no.
I'm going to go with no.
Because,
yeah, definitely no.
Because I feel like Before Watchmen, we're only three issues in, but I'm really starting to appreciate the less is more kind of approach to things, you know?
I'm not even sure I want these.
Yeah. I know. It's true.
I'm almost positive I don't.
Yeah.
I mean, it's fine they're doing it. That's, you know, whatever, but it's
Here's why you don't want an ongoing Before Watchmen series or an ongoing Watchmen series, because you really don't want to get to that point where it's issue 72 and Chuck Austin's writing it. And you know, and it just like, and it, you know, like, and it just sad.
And Clark still hasn't become Superman.
Exactly. Yeah.
He's living in Metropolis, works the Daily Planet.
Listen, you shut your mouth. You shut your hole.
It's just, I mean, like, I'm honestly thinking of this like fan fiction. That's how I deal with it right now. And I don't really know if I want to read it.
Yeah.
No, I do not want an ongoing.
All right, so that is our voicemail. If you got a question, you can call us at 1-888-FANBOYS. It's 1-888-326-2697. But we can't stop podcasting. Fanboy Don't Miss comes out usually every Monday, where we talk to a creator about a book that's coming out this upcoming week. And this week we talked to the co-writer of Get Jiro from Vertigo Comics. No, we didn't get Anthony Bourdain, but we did talk to Joel Rose, who is the co-writer, who is a used to work at DC. Has published graphic novels before, has been a longtime friend of Anthony Bourdain. He actually was the first guy who published anything by Anthony Bourdain, and then also helped get the book, his first book published. So some fascinating stuff about Anthony Bourdain, as well as what went into Get Jiro. And if you're into food, if you're into Oishimbo, we talked about Oishimbo a little, that sort of thing. You want to listen to this and pick up Get Jiro. I've read it. It's awesome. So all the hype is worthy. But additionally, so you can go to iFanboy.com on Monday to get that, or go to iTunes and search for iFanboy Don't Miss and subscribe to the feed. And we also do Talksplode, which seems to be coming out every Thursday as we just keep rolling with the content. This past Thursday, Josh had a enlightening discussion with Gabriel Hardman and Jeff Parker.
And another thing I don't like. No. It's a great – this might be my favorite.
Yeah.
Gabriel Hardman and Jeff Parker, we're mostly talking about making comics rather than what's coming up in – whatever story. I had a ton of fun, talked for about an hour and a half show, covered all sorts of great stuff. If you want to make comics at all of any stripe, you need to listen to it probably twice.
And this coming Thursday, you can keep an eye out. I'm going to be talking to Mike Norton of Battle Pug fame and Jamie S. Rich about their upcoming project, It Girl from Image Comics, picking up a character from the Mike Allred Madman universe and running with it. So, you know, we love Norton, so it'll be good.
Mike Norton draws 47% of all comics published.
He really does. It's amazing.
Did you know that?
Yeah. So you can get that iFanboy Talksplode at iFanboy.com or look back in the feed on this podcast that you're listening to.
Super. There's also the Make Comics podcast, so many podcasts, in which I talk to editor Andy Schmidt of Comics Experience, and we go through various topics that are germane to making comics from very different ways, from artists to writers to letterers to all sorts of things. It's a little snippet of stuff. You can make sure to search for the Make Comics feed if you want to subscribe to that podcast. I really like that show. I think it's really helpful.
It is. I enjoy listening to it. So,
you can find that show on iFanboy.com along with Ron's Pick of the Week review and all the great writing that happens every day on iFanboy.com from all of our wonderful writers who are way more talented than we are. You can also go to iFanboy.com/about to find our social network pages to be our friends online. And you can go to Twitter.com/iFanboy and Facebook.com/iFanboy to follow everything going on throughout the day.
And you can write to us at contact@ifanboy.com or leave a voicemail at 888-FANBOYS, which is 326-2697, with your questions, comments, concerns, discussion topics, recipes.
Ooh, recipes.
Sports. Bets.
So for 339 episodes, we've thanked you for helping to spread the word about iFanboy and asked you to write reviews of this podcast on iTunes. Now take a time and go over and write a review of iFanboy Don't Miss or of the Make Comics podcast. Help people find out about those podcasts. We really appreciate it, and we appreciate everybody who helps spread the word about iFanboy. Everyone who posts on Twitter and Facebook about us and that sort of thing. So we really thank you all for that. So, All right. Well, I get...
He's just sagging in his chair, Josh. Is that what happened?
It was a contented sigh, is what it was.
Yeah.
It was nice.
It's summer. Summer's in swing.
Ugh.
Right, Josh? How's that fan working out for you?
It's not doing what can you it's not doing anything. It's just blowing hotter air from into the room. I don't have a shirt on, guys. Listen. That was my skin.
Six years and the hot jokes keep rolling. Until next week, I'm Ron.
I'm Connor.
Guys, I'm sorry about my attitude at the beginning.
This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means. And I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert extrovert thing. And some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away. And, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened, but it can be tough to deal with. And also one of the things is like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/iFanboy.